you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
If y'all ready, give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Caleb Williams' contract.
What's the most interesting thing that you ever asked for in a contract? I know that I've asked for a signing bonus a bunch of different times.
I figure a white blue chip athlete like myself deserves something extra. 30 grand. I'd like to have it in cash. And I was tossing one of those gym bags you got.
I tried to get a guaranteed ticket and perks package.
This would be a fun topic to ask some of our radio elders. I wonder what the best perk that Johnny B ever asked for and got.
You ever hear the stories about David Lee Roth when he was hosting his radio show? Like, he demanded that the studio be filled with sand. So.
I bet Mitch has great stories regarding this from his days at the Loop, man.
It's like the red phone. Where's Putin? Mitch Rosen is the sports czar.
You guys remember when Mac came back for afternoons and then his vocal cords collapsed on the first day? He asked for a slushy machine.
And now! Oh, boy, that didn't work. I can't pull it off.
There goes the quote. Yeah.
Have to get you a Slurpee.
We have an answer from our leader, Mitch Rosen. An on-air host wanted a red convertible. I provided one through sales. He had it for a year. When he turned it in, he left a $7,000 repair receipt because the car was in an accident and he didn't disclose. That was fun with the client. One of his kids got in an accident.
That's amazing.
Barry Rosman.
I mean, truth is, Spiegel, I never really liked you.
That's what Caleb asked for.
There's only one of me.
It's like if Prince played quarterback.
Oh. So look, ask for stuff. The point is ask for stuff in a contract, folks.
We're going to take the cops up on those demands they want.
We got a killer list going.
Yeah, check it out. We ask for airplay and whatever else we want. Then we demand a whole bunch of weird stuff. This way we complete insanity later.
So what else we got so far?
Number one, airplay. And that's underlined twice. Number two, a football helmet filled with cottage cheese.
Hey, wait, what was up for me?
Go for broke. It's on the LAPD.
Number 13, naked pictures of B. Arthur.
Excuse me?
The chick from the Golden Girls.
Look, I know who she is. Come on, fellas. I'm just a street cop.
One, two, three, and here we go, Tim. Here we go. Here we go, Tim.
Here we go, Tony.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons from 2 to 6 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Thank you for hanging out with us, Parkins and Spiegel, on The Score. We got a fun day tomorrow on this show, as we will be taking some mob members and their plus ones to the suite at Wrigley Field. Then we'll be doing the show afterwards from Pat Hughes' booth. Danny and Shane will be there. It'll be an excellent time for the three Cubs fans and one Sox fan on this show. That'll be great.
Two Cubs fans, two Sox fans, I think, right? Who else is going?
It's hard to keep track. No, you've been flip-flopping a lot.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you're like a pancake.
I think you're making that up.
I think you said yesterday. It was all the way back to yesterday, yeah. I think, that he hasn't watched an inning in over a month.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
Okay.
I also don't pay for Marquee, so I haven't watched an inning of them either. Cool. I just watched the condensed version. Just to be up on things.
Yeah.
But my question is, and for our friend Joe Johnson over at Obvious Shirts, Tanny and I don't want to be White Sox fans that wear something White Sox to a non-Cubs White Sox game because that's just stirring the pot for no reason. I hate that guy. I hate the guy that wears a Sox hat to a Cubs Diamondbacks game.
Hold
right?
on, Tanny, when we threw out the first pitch as a show, were you not wearing a White Sox jersey, sir?
I was not.
No. You were not?
No.
Okay, good. He wore the Parkins, Spiegel, Tanny, and the mom shirt.
I did not. No.
I wore that one.
I wore a Score 30th Anniversary polo.
That's what it was.
And I wore a baseball cap with the Farmio patch on it.
Oh, that's right. That was your subtle.
That was my subtle yeah. nod.
So you could go with the same thing again. That'd be an option. Shane, do you have any like generic baseball things?
I don't. I try to avoid that. So I'm looking for something either custom or something that Obvious Shirts has already for just a pickup right before the game because it's right there on Clark and Grace, right?
Sure.
I got to tell you, I've got some good Obvious Shirts that I have in my personal collection already. They don't have to go to the trouble, but they do have that. It's the center field scoreboard clock.
Yes.
With the 120. Because I love 120 games.
You do. As
it's
a radio
got no Cubs logo
as
on
an
it.
Afternoon show producer, you adore 120 games.
Yeah, we literally have a calendar next to Tanny and I here with the 120 Friday and Thursday games highlighted, and then the code down there says the highlighter means Tanny and Shane are happy. That's how much we love day games.
It's my favorite shirt they have because there's no Cubs logo on it, and it's just a clock that reads 120.
It's just day off. Half day.
Yeah.
That's
good. So that's a good option.
So maybe not. Maybe I'll just walk in there tomorrow before the game and try to find something generic to wear.
You'll be able to find something.
Yeah,
the 120 would be good. I do like that green color.
You know what's generic that you could wear? It could be a good fit. I miss Grandpa Rossi. That would be a good one for you.
Oh, I would never call him that because I'm a grown man and so is he.
All right, how about Superman wears Javi Baez pajamas? You could wear those.
Actually.
That's pretty good.
That'd be a fun bit to roll out the old Javi gear.
When did Superman become so bad at his job?
No, Superman loved tagging.
Superman hitting 120?
Loved really fast tagging.
God, the worst
offensive player in baseball.
Good for him.
Well,
he's trying hard.
He did get paid.
The greatest game that ever played was on a Wednesday in Cleveland.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. A lot of options. A
lot
for
of options, Shane. A
lot of options.
I hate that one.
I like it. That's a good one. So, you buying the Justin Steele speculation in any way?
No. I'm not buying that. I personally am not feeling the Justin Steele speculation that was out there. All due respect to Matt Trueblood, who wrote it up over at Northside Baseball, and some others. But like, just because he's old, he doesn't have as many pitches thrown by now as you might think. He was a position player first for a while, and even a position player, briefly in the minors before the changeover. No, I don't think that's a dude you consider dealing. So no, I'm not.
He's not
you?
He's not a free agent until 28.
Yeah.
2028.
It's it'd be
such a you'd obviously have to get multiple stud high level prospects that you would think could contribute to the team next year, because there's no way they go in the next year not thinking that they can compete. But he's such an organizational win. He matters so much to the team. I do not see it.
They're going to have some very specific free agent needs that they will need to throw money at, but they'll need, you know, a cheap and outstanding starting pitching to really make the entire thing work.
435 big league innings for Justin Steele.
Yeah.
In his career. So, you know, not a ton of wear and tear for a guy who's 29 years old. Obviously minor league innings too, but that 435 big league innings for Steele.
Because of when the trade deadline is this year, and it's Tuesday, July 30th at 6 p.m., you've got 10 games. There are only 10 games right now, starting tomorrow, that the Cubs are going to play before that trade deadline comes. So right now they sit at an 11% chance of making the playoffs, according to FanGraphs. There are 12 teams in the National League within 3.5 games of a postseason spot. The Cubs are the last of those 12. They're the lowest.
They're 3.5 out of the final wild card spot. So they would need to get the third and final wild card spot, they would need to pass the Reds, Giants, Pirates, Padres, Diamondbacks, and Mets.
And they only have 10 games with which to make their case to Jed Hoyer that this ought to be a buy or a stand pat as opposed to a sell. And those games begin tomorrow with a 6-game homestand against very good teams. Diamondbacks, a World Series team last year, started very slow, have been absolutely on fire of late, both pitching and hitting. I mean, they were a Paul Sewald blown save away from sweeping the Dodgers, and also a Paul Sewald blown save away from sweeping the Padres on the road out in California. So like they played very, very well over a 10-game stretch to find themselves a game over 500. So you got them for three, and then here's Milwaukee. So six games at home, and then three in Kansas City, where the Royals are, what, seven games over 500 right now? And then one in Cincinnati at the Reds, and then bing, bang, boom, you're at the deadline. That's not a lot of time, not a lot of games to try and prove a point. And I still think that the playoff odds need to get up near 20. They need to get up at least near 20% for Jed Hoyer to feel like he's going to go out and get them something that might help.
I don't know that he's thinking about it in just those terms, because he said it's not a firm number and a firm number of teams, and so it's obviously about playing well.
And it's about players on the roster fitting in, like we talked about last week, having some of the bullpen pieces back, see if Julian Merriweather is back, see if Caleb Killian is helpful and useful, that kind of thing.
So it feels to me like there's not much they could do in 10 games to make them a big buyer. That I don't, like Mason Miller and things like that. That feels very unlikely because it's going to be such a seller's market because so many teams are still in it and the deadline is soon and expanded postseason and all of that. Like you're in a better position at the deadline if you're the White Sox.
I'd be shocked if they're a Mason Miller buyer because of how much it would cost. But how about Carlos Estevez or Kyle Finnegan? Other closers.
It would surprise me. It costs a lot of money, and they're getting a bunch of relief pitchers back, and Ben Brown could be back, and guys in the own organization could be there. I know, but
I don't know about Ben Brown.
Nobody does. We talked about it a little bit. Like rental closers are not cheap acquisitions. Would you give up Candelario for him?
Alcantara, you mean?
Alcantara, yeah.
Kevin Alcantara?
Yeah. Sorry.
It's all right. I mean, like, Kevin Alcantara or James Triantos, something like that. No, you really wouldn't want to. You really wouldn't want to.
Would you give up Matt Shaw?
No, I wouldn't give up Matt Shaw. So I'm not giving up anything.
But you see what I'm saying? It's very difficult.
I might give up Kevin Alcantara. I might. That's a tall and rangy outfielder where you're pretty locked in to Seiya and Hap and probably PCA. I would try to give up Canario. I'd try to give up Alexander Canario and maybe I could.
I'm not saying they don't have things to give up. They obviously do. They've got their strength is their depth. It's just, I don't think, given they're in last place in the division and they're in last place among the wild card eligible teams that are realistic, there's so many teams in front of them that barring a 8-2, 9-1 heater out of the deadline, they're still going to have four teams in front of them in the division and five or six teams in front of them in the wild card. So that makes it very hard to be an aggressive buyer.
What if it's a 5-1 homestand or even a 4-2 homestand, but it includes a sweep of the Brewers? So you take three from Milwaukee and all of a sudden you feel viable in the division again, perhaps. 5-1 homestand with a sweep of the Brewers.
Because you're 8.5 out of the division right now.
Uh-huh. So take two out of three from the Diamondbacks, and then you sweep Milwaukee here. 5-1 homestand, you find yourself 5.5 back of the Brewers by the time you get to the weekend before the Kansas City series. That's a buy.
That is a buy. That sweeping Milwaukee would help tremendously, obviously. It's just, I'm not expecting it, man. I'm not expecting.
You just swept Baltimore at Baltimore.
Yeah, but then the break happened. Yep. We know how baseball works. There is no such thing as momentum in that sport, and arguably in life. And so I just think that it's the type of thing where, maybe they come out that hot.
That'd be pretty damn cool if they do.
Yes, it would.
And look how it doesn't take that much to get us to get you to flip and think about it.
But it feels much more likely that they will stand pat.
Or do a very small buy as opposed to trading for a true closer.
I'm really intrigued by this Cubs firing of the interpreter for Seiya Suzuki. I'd love to talk about this with you, this news.
Yeah,
that
Patrick Mooney has it in The Athletic.
Can you share some of the details about it? Because it's Toy Matsushita, who's been around with Seiya and has been kind of beloved and enjoyed by people within the Cubs.
A team source told Patrick Mooney that they are framing this as an organizational decision to go in a different direction. Those responsibilities, which also included relaying messages from the front office and coaching staff to Suzuki, will now be absorbed by two Cubs staffers. One, a longtime Cubs employee who manages their Pacific Rim operations and Major League Video system that will continue to support Suzuki, and Shota Imanaga's interpreter, Edwin Stanberry, will also assist in communications with Seiya.
But do we know if they speak Japanese?
I assume they do.
Good start.
Yeah, that would probably be one of the first things that came up in the interview, I would think.
Mooney gives you a couple more little nuggets of context later in the article. He talks about how Imanaga has built relationships with coaches and teammates and how it's been intentional. That's been the oft-repeated description of how Shota has done that. Behind the scenes, it also involved keeping some distance from his interpreter and strengthening his sense of independence. So praise for Imanaga about building relationships on his own with coaches and with teammates and keeping some distance from his interpreter. That is a subtle implication that Seiya Suzuki and his interpreter are lockstep and super close about stuff. And there's one more sentence a little bit later on about Suzuki that, quote, streamlining communication could be a way for the team to make sure he is confident and decisive. Streamlining the communication. I find that sentence very interesting when I think about how we discussed Seiya with Jed Hoyer last time that he was on.
Jed, one other thing about Seiya, who's been hitting the ball so well, but is what can be done or has been done to try and help him in right field? There's been some drops. I've saw someone refer to it as the yips or indecision. Nico almost got hurt last night as they collided. Is that a conversation or is it tricky business?
Obviously, he has struggled out there at times. Not something that was anticipated. He obviously had a really good reputation defensively in Japan, and I think that he has all the tools to be a really good right fielder. He's fast, he can throw, but yeah, he's definitely even going back to last year, shown some of that on balls, and yeah, I think that the honest answer probably is tricky, but I think it's something we have to keep working on the right way. But yes, it has been unusual and doesn't go unnoticed.
So that's pretty easy for me to connect those dots. He's been very high anxiety and scary out there in right field. And there's Jed on with us less than a week ago saying that it's been tricky to communicate with him about that. And then Mooney writes about streamlining the communication.
Yeah, I think that it's a reasonable dot to connect. They also write, Mooney does, and it's a good article, that they want to continue to be known, the Cubs do, as a destination for Japanese players and as a place where they can be seen to reach their full potential. And that Stanberry, who's Shota's guy, has done a great job of highlighting Shota's personality and that he's become more marketable. He's on the cover of a magazine right now here in Chicago, and that they're a big fan of like how he has kind of presented him to the media and the public and worked with him on getting his personality out there. So that's a non-baseball reason in terms of like performance on the field, but it is a reason of you got to compete with every team in baseball for posting fees, and you got to have a through line with the Cubs do with Yu Darvish and all of those things, right? They want to be known as a spot where
they get the most out of Japanese players.
Exactly, because that's a super competitive marketplace led by the Dodgers with Yamamoto and Shohei Ohtani, obviously. And so, yeah, that's a huge piece of it, too, that anything that is, hey, this guy was better in Japan than he is with the Cubs. Why is that? If they can make this guy, maybe he's actually the reason, he's a part of the reason, or he's the fall guy for the reason. Hey, let's just highlight, let's just promote Shota's guy. give him more responsibility because Schoed is doing such a great job. I think it's at least worth also mentioning.
Absolutely.
For the piece.
Definitely worth mentioning. And I mean, but look, man, you know me. I'm fascinated by the mental difficulty of the game and the need to talk about this stuff openly. I mean, John Lester is going to be with Marquee this weekend and doing a few games
on
Marquee, which is really cool. But Lester's ability to eventually conquer the throw-to-first monster that lived on his back is one example of the organization figuring out a way through lots of communication and open, trusting communication.
Jed gave Joe a lot of credit.
Something. Yeah, he did. He did. He did give Joe a lot of credit. But like, this is, I mean, Schoed. I mean, we've seen Schoed punch himself in the leg, frustrated by it. We've heard Zach and Pat Hughes and Jim Deshaies flat out call it the yips and refer to
Saya.
It.
You said Schoed.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Saya. It punch himself in the leg and people flat out calling it the yips. It takes a lot of communication and openness to get through on some of this stuff.
Well, and the drop at the end of last year.
And maybe that's when it began.
That's just as high profile of a mistake defensively. Certainly all of last year for this version of the Cubs.
Huge part of that September collapse.
Yeah, it was a huge piece of it. So, and he wore it very, very hard, obviously. The whole team felt so terrible for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's something to that. They'll address it tomorrow. But good scoop by Patrick Mooney.
I agree.
In the Athletic. But yeah, there was the thought exercise of trading Steele and what it would look like. We don't think it's exceptionally likely at all. Got another thought exercise for you.
Oh, you love these.
It's significantly less serious than that one.
That guy was good.
Yeah, less. Oh, yeah.
Less serious.
Talented.
Fun.
Talented. He had everything in perspective. You know, he's just really, really good and where he had it in life. But we'll do that next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Hey everybody, we are live.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Strange twists and turns with the guys over there on the Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Afternoons on The Score.
We're having a little fun.
And what would you do if you had $45 million to spare? Buy a dinosaur? That's exactly what hedge fund billionaire Ken Griffin did. Griffin made the record-breaking bid of $44.6 million at a Sotheby's auction and won the fossil of a Stegosaurus. The 150-million-year-old dinosaur named Apex was discovered 2 years ago in, of all places, Dinosaur, Colorado.
Now, this is some rich guy stuff. Although I need to acknowledge the song.
Oh.
Speaks is happy.
Oh, it's Jay Maskus and Dinosaur Jr., baby! Yes!
Why were they ripping off Dreams by the Cranberries so blatantly?
This was before Dreams, I'm pretty sure.
Why did the Cranberries rip off Dinosaur Jr. so blatantly?
Because it's awesome! Jay Maskus, great, crazy, weird-ass guitar player. Anyway, continue, sir.
Well, I just, I found this story to be so patently absurd, but also kind of amazing that it felt perfect for a day where we have no sports.
Okay.
So Ken Griffin, one of the richest people in the world.
Hedge fund titan.
Yes. Chicago's familiar with the man.
Hmm.
He is so rich that he has buy a dinosaur money. So the question is, because he bought a $45 million Stegosaurus. basically.
I'm going to need to know more, but can we back up on some of the things that he also owns? Do you know, or do you want to get to that later?
We can get to it within the whole thing. But the thing yesterday was this fossil is 11 feet tall and 27 feet long. It was expected to go for between $4 and $7 million, and the bidding went insane, and it got up to $45 million as a mostly intact, one of the largest mostly intact dinosaur fossil discoveries ever.
Has the skin on it too and everything?
No. It's just the fossil. I believe it's just the bones. But so the question,
it's a skeleton more than it is a fossil.
Yeah. Well,
I think.
I don't know. It says fossil.
It's
a dinosaur.
Right. I guess one.
Oh, I miss Mac.
I guess one. Yeah. That was the best. That was a real fun drop from that era of the show.
Anytime when Mac would mention anything before 1985.
Sure.
Whenever
it's a dinosaur.
Well, somebody called him that.
The DVD walk-up.
Somebody called him that in a blog post, I believe. Somebody called him an entitled dinosaur. He didn't take it well.
Yeah.
It's all good now, though. Everybody gets along. Everything's okay.
That's good. So the thought that I had was, among others, obviously, he has penthouse apartments and homes all over the world. He's got unbelievable cars, airplane, etc. Uh-huh. But he apparently has so much money that even after he has everything, he's spending $45 million on a dinosaur. So if you had everything and you could spend $45 million on something, what are you buying?
$45 million.
That's what I'm at. Yeah. You got everything. I'm not looking for a house. I'm not looking for a plane. I'm not looking for a sports car. The guy bought a dinosaur with $45 million laying around.
I would put it towards solving world hunger. Good night, everybody.
Oh, God. Way to take the fun out of the game.
Thanks so much, everyone.
That's just...
It's good to see you.
I don't like it. I don't like that answer one
You don't
bit.
Like solving world hunger?
I don't. I don't.
That's not a surprise.
Yeah, no. I would... my answer is going to sound so selfish.
I know. I only did that for fun.
Yeah. No.
But let me think about it. Because I don't want anything that's $45 million. But you said I already have all the houses.
You got houses. You got cars. You have a plane. You got this guy has so much money. He bought a dinosaur with $45 million because it didn't matter.
I'm not buying a dinosaur.
No, of course not.
I'm not doing that. I'll tell you. Here's my real answer. I would buy luxury. No, I'd buy behind the plate tickets at 10 different ballparks across America.
You'd be Marlins man.
Yeah, I would be Marlins man, and I'd get a 4-pack because I have a plane. I can bring people, right? I can bring my friends.
You got a plane.
I can meet people in towns. I would have a 4-pack behind the plate at Fenway, at Yankee, at Dodger, at Pac Bell or whatever it's called in Frisco, in Pittsburgh, in Seattle.
And you just travel the country watching strikeouts.
Every baseball season, I would go with 2 to 3 friends. Hell, maybe we'd leave one open just so we could have a little more leg room. Or I'd find somebody local who needed to go to the game and wanted to go to the game. So a 4-pack behind the plate for about 10 games a year at every beautiful ballpark in America.
All right. Not a bad answer. I'd build a golf course for myself.
Where?
That's a good question because it wouldn't be like it'd be fun to have an island. I'd always thought it'd be cool to have like
Would there be an age limit on the island?
Yeah. Anyone's welcome at my island.
Any age?
Sure.
Yeah. You can do anything?
I got to be able to bring my kids. No, you can't do anything. You're
going to bring your kids to the island?
To my island. I'm bringing my kids to my island.
What the hell, dude?
It's my island. I want a golf course that no one else can play
on. It should work okay, though, because Owen has a healthy respect for the water all the way around the island. Should be fine.
Yeah. $45 million.
Oh, no.
Or a dinosaur.
Yeah, you're telling me, Owen.
It's crazy. You guys got to...
Backtrack on yours just for a second. The $45 million could technically also give you enough money to like knock down already structured buildings or property in a spot where you would like to put it. So let's say there's a
That's
great
true.
Neighborhood
you
in your hometown. Like, hey, I'm going to buy out 60 of these homes and then put my golf course even closer.
He'd be very popular in this town.
I'm going to buy your house and knock it down and erect a golf course that only I can play.
We got to move the train through. We got to build train tracks. Is that what you're doing? No, putting a golf course. It's
displace as many North Shore residents as you can. They've got it good enough, dude. Yeah, they'll find somewhere else.
They do. All right. That's interesting. No, I think I'd go remote.
Okay.
I'd go remote. My own mountain course, my own lake course, something like that. That'd be pretty incredible. But
what would you guys do with $44 to $45 million? Shane, Tanny, you got an answer on this one?
Well, obviously, I would buy Tony Soprano's 2003 Escalade.
Hell yeah!
Why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah,
got James Gandolfini's signature in three spots in the interior.
How much does it go for at the last sale?
Well, funny you mentioned that, Danny. It sold for the first time back in 2015 for $119,000, and it sold last year for $123,000.
That's
so
it?
It's only going up in value.
Yeah, but so that's an easy buy.
What about the maroon Suburban that got shot up?
Yeah, that's one. You said one thing, so I'm trying to, you know what I mean? I like that one as well.
Oh, we're doing one thing?
What would you do with it? Well, yeah, I was going for like a big $40 million plus purchase.
Yeah, I'm just not greedy like you.
Tanny's got $44.8 million left over.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
I've got money left over after my baseball tickets, I think.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So the long game is like, you know, you're driving around in Tony Soprano's Cadillac Escalade, and then, you know, you go out to dinner with someone, and then afterwards, the other people you're going out with are like, was that? The Escalade kind of Soprano.
Yeah. You know what,
he's
Tanny?
So rich, and he's driving a 2003 Escalade.
Do I just go to dinner with Eric Mangini?
I'll buy you that Escalade with the money left over after my baseball.
That's nice.
Yeah, I'll take care of that.
Super nice.
You got that.
That's super nice.
I'm happy to do that.
Shane, what are you buying?
I mean, this is not going to be incredibly sexy, but like, I never want to leave Chicago, and I also never want to work again. So I would just buy like a 3-story brownstone or a walk up in the Gold Coast and just stay there forever. Like, nice roof deck, all the grills that I could ever use, all the smokers. I would buy the property and just stay there.
Yeah.
Okay. Walk to Oak Street Beach whenever I want to. An entire floor for all my dogs.
Ken Griffin, I'm saying he already has every property he wants. He has the plane. He has everything that is a normal rich guy expense.
I would love to buy a home.
Yeah, okay. So I understand.
I don't have what Ken Griffin has.
That's the game. The guy bought a dinosaur.
You should buy the Sopranos house. I already bought the car. You should buy the Sopranos house.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Okay, I would hook up. I'd go find Jerry Reinsdorf, and I'd pay Paul DeJong's next contract, which is probably about $45 million. Because he's going to extend him.
That's not bad.
I wonder how much of the White Sox you get for $45 million.
Right. I mean, not much. Well, a lot of the roster.
Buy out Tony La Russa's share of power.
You probably become, like 2% owner of the White Sox or something?
Yeah,
for
40, something like
45
that.
$45 million.
Boy, that'd be a miserable existence.
No power, but you have to sit on the board meetings and watch them mismanage your investment.
Great, I get a piece of whatever you guys decide to do.
You know what? I'd take the $45 million and fix the Chicago Police Department's pension fund. That's what I would do.
Look at you.
I've got good stuff already.
I'd fix CPD's pension fund. I'm dealing with world hunger. You're doing the police fund, and Danny's building a golf course that only he can play.
That's right. I mean, you can play on it if I invite you, but it's mine.
Oh, I understand.
It's my course.
If Manly owned a course, do you think he'd still not invite you?
100%.
We're playing Beverly this summer, Manly. We're playing.
No, he's
putting
out
the
Wani
public
only.
Pressure. You don't think he's going to invite me, huh?
So, he's taking Wani.
So
other things that he owns.
I love to go to the Art Institute. Christine and I.
It's a lot cheaper than $45 million. I know. Now, if you want.
This is tangential. Just a little, minorly tangential. We go a decent amount. It's so peaceful to be there. It's such an incredible collection. And Christine's favorite thing in there is this Edgar Degas statue of a ballerina where her hands are behind her. And it's a pretty famous statue. And she looks very proud and strong. And it's become an icon of like strong feminism, a strong woman figure. And it's got some kinship out there in the world. There's the statue of the girl standing up to the bull that's on Wall Street. That's pretty famous. There's some other statues like it. But anyway, very famous statue by Edgar Degas, the ballerina. And there's apparently 8 of them, I believe, in the world. So we went about 3 weeks ago to the Art Institute, and we went to where we know that statue is, and it was not there. And we're looking around. Where is it? Where is it? And we asked a guard, and the guard said, oh, yeah, Ken Griffin owned that, and he took it with him when he went to Florida, when he moved to Florida.
Man.
He owned a crap ton of stuff that was at the Art Institute by William de Kooning, Jackson Pollock. There was a lot more, and he just decided to take it all out of the Art Institute and put it in some museum in Palm Beach, Florida, down there where he lives. And so all of these people in Chicago, these art lovers across the world who've gone to see it, can no longer see it. My wife was crushed. F that guy.
Yeah, fair. You know, that's probably not the most famous thing he owns.
In terms of art?
In terms of anything.
Oh, yeah, no, I absolutely.
He owns a first edition copy of the Constitution.
The United States Constitution.
Yeah. They drafted the Constitution.
The one that everybody signed on the bottom?
Yeah.
Or is that the Declaration?
The Declaration.
There's the one they signed.
Yeah, but the Constitution was written.
It's an important document.
And then they made some copies, but they wrote them out.
That's a big photocopy.
No. They wrote them out. He owns a first edition copy. $43 million he paid for it.
Oh, my God.
He said in an interview, his son called him when he saw that it was up for auction and said, Dad, you have to buy the Constitution. Father, buy the Constitution. And so he said, okay, and he did.
He bought the Constitution.
Yeah.
And then
that is in a museum.
What do you think the security system cost to keep Nick Cage away from it?
I was going to say, wasn't it in peril? I mean, the Constitution was in peril, like, and Nicolas Cage got there.
Nick Cage also owns a dinosaur head, or did, before he got into a bunch of financial trouble. He had to give it up.
Wow.
Yeah, he paid like $10 million.
Was it like repoed, or did he sell it?
Yeah, he did.
Isn't the Constitution
really
big?
Yeah.
I remember seeing the Constitution.
It is a pretty big deal in this country.
Yeah.
It kind of is like the basis of everything that we've been doing.
Yeah,
you know?
I know, but like
some people say we should.
Not even metaphorically, like physically, I think it's pretty large, if memory serves.
I just watched the John Adams miniseries, and they didn't get into the size of the actual document itself.
That's a bit of oversight.
Yeah, I think so.
You can get it on Amazon, 8.5 by 11.
Yeah, there you go. Why pay $43 bucks?
What are you doing, dude? I can print it now.
I've got one on a t-shirt, you know?
Yeah, I got mine on a shower curtain. It's pretty impressive.
Mine's on my AR-15.
Hell yeah, America.
Just a wrap.
Yeah.
Texter says, I'm a stockbroker. Ken Griffin owns my soul.
Yeah.
Oh,
Museum
boy.
Of Science and Industry just changed his name after, and Ken Griffin straight up sucks. Yeah, he sucks. But
did they change their name after him?
Yeah, I think he put his name on it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
God.
He's worth $23 billion.
Yeah.
And now he owns a dinosaur.
Congrats. Congrats to him. Would you please send the Degas statue back to Chicago so my wife can go look at it? Thank you very much.
Hey, Ken, you want to buy another dinosaur? I hear talk radio's up for sale.
Hey! Hey!
That deserved a rim shot, but that's okay.
But seriously, Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.